This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. Life expectancy is on the rise, and as the nearly 80 million baby boomers get older, they face a higher risk of being diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's is a progressive mental deterioration that constricts one's ability to carry a conversation and respond to their environment. There are currently more than 5 million Americans living with the disease. More than two-thirds of them are women. And according to a new study, there's growing evidence that women's brains are especially vulnerable to Alzheimer's disease and other cognitive issues. Two of the authors of the study are with us now. Dr. Murali Doraiswamy is a professor of psychiatry at Duke University and the lead author of the study. Welcome, Dr. Doraiswamy.
Well, thank you very much.
And joining us, co-author of the study, Catherine Lind. Thanks for being with us. Can you tell us about the study and how you were able to come to the conclusion that women's mental capabilities seem to decline faster than men?
Certainly. So first off, we began by examining 400 subjects who are at risk of Alzheimer's disease. They had the condition of mild cognitive impairment, which means that they have a greater likelihood of developing the disease. We examined these men and women, and we looked at their rates of cognitive and functional decline. And so we followed this for up to 8 years with a mean of 4 years. And we found that women appear to decline at twice the rate of men in their cognition and in their function. So they're both in their mental reasoning and in their home, their hobbies, and their social life.
So, Katie, will you just speak a little more about how those women over the years that you were watching, how their lives changed? You were talking a bit about social lives, but what does that look like?
Essentially, that would look like in their home life, for instance, they may start forgetting things, and it would be, or they may begin to lose interest in certain activities. When I say home and hobbies, that's essentially their activities of daily living. So in their function, you would see these differences. In their cognition, the most well-known is changes in their memory and in their reasoning skills. Sometimes the visual spatial ability also starts to decline as well. So you'd see something that would be beyond what you would see in normal aging. So it's beyond just forgetting your keys occasionally. It'd be something more serious.
And these are things one could say that social declines that would make the ability to live on your own less likely, that the rate of deterioration would mean that you might need other people in the home helping you or might not be able to live in your home.
That would be more of the stage of actual dementia. So for mild cognitive impairment, that's not quite – independent living is certainly still possible. That dementia is more of the stage where truly independent living starts to get affected. You really do need a caregiver. But for mild cognitive impairment, I would say that that's a stage where you can still function on your own. You can still live on your own, but you see these noticeable changes in your mental function and in your activities of daily life.
Dr. Doraiswamy, you were also, of course, involved in this study. I wonder, does the research give strong enough evidence to conclude that more women develop full-blown dementia than men?
Not from our study by itself, but when you combine our study with a number of other studies in the literature, certainly it seems to. And of course, as you mentioned in the introduction to the program, two-thirds of all people with Alzheimer's in this country are women. So that by itself says that there's something going on. Now, the question is it just differences in lifespan, or is there truly a greater biological vulnerability in women that is contributing to it, in addition to the lifespan differences, the fact that women live longer? And we think that both factors are at play.
And so, Dr. Doraiswamy, what are the implications of this research?
Well, there are several implications. The first is, of course, our findings are preliminary. So the first thing that needs to be done is we need additional studies to confirm our findings. The second, as Katie mentioned, we tracked women for 8 years, but you know, we didn't have enough of a sample size of men and women towards the end of the study to truly tell if women develop dementia at a greater rate than men. So we need larger studies that follow people for longer to really see if this greater rate of cognitive decline actually translates into greater numbers of women developing Alzheimer's. And then the last thing we need is to find the mechanisms. Is it related to greater brain shrinkage? Is it related to greater accumulation of Alzheimer pathology at an earlier stage in women? Is it related to hormonal differences, or is it related to genetics? I think there may be a number of factors, including lifestyle factors possibly, so we need to tease those out.
Katie, in thinking about this research and what this might mean, does it mean that there will be recommendations for the ways in which patients with memory issues will be treated?
I say that at this moment, not necessarily. At this time, there, in terms of the research, there isn't enough evidence, as Dr. Doraiswamy mentioned, that this is more of a preliminary sort of set of findings. So in terms of clinical practice, I would say at the moment the advice would still remain the same for men and women, mostly to pay attention to cardiovascular health, to be heart healthy in diet and exercise. But in the future, if we do find greater findings, it could potentially cause some changes in the field.
Is there any idea of what that might look like?
Not to the extent that we've considered, but as I mentioned earlier, I do believe that the advice for both genders right now would remain the same.
Dr. Doraiswamy, can you talk about other tests scientists have done to try and test gender disparities with this disease?
Well, what we need to start doing right now is to see if, for example, there are differences in the rates of brain shrinkage, and you can measure brain shrinkage using MRI scans. We can now, for the first time, also track the accumulation of brain pathology using a type of scan called PET scans. And then we can also measure, other aspects of Alzheimer's in the blood. We can measure Alzheimer's signs in the eye, possibly. So these are some tests that we could begin to start looking for genetic differences. There are also, of course, hormonal changes that occur in both men and women, especially in women during menopause. So one needs to sort of do further studies to see if those hormonal factors somehow play a role in making women more vulnerable for getting Alzheimer's. So those are some things that we could do initially. And then, of course, the big question is, is there also a lifestyle link, and is somehow genetics and lifestyle interacting in a way that's far more complex than we can start teasing out right now?
Dr. Doraiswamy, you've also worked on some other studies, including a smartphone-based cognitive test. Can you talk about that and how that may help with earlier diagnosis?
Yeah, sure. I mean, ultimately, it's very time-consuming and expensive and also laborious to bring elderly people into a hospital setting or into a clinic to do 1 hour or 2 hour paper and pencil tests. It's simply not scalable, and given the expense to the health system, we need to find sort of ways that are simpler and home-based tests, because oftentimes the paper and pencil tests we do in the clinic may or may not be representative of how well a person is functioning at home. So through sort of web-based tests and digital health, smartphone-based tests, and perhaps other ways of mimicking virtual reality so that we can actually sort of make a patient do things on a computer, the tasks that they would normally do, if we could simulate, an ATM machine and make a patient actually withdraw money from an ATM or pay for groceries in a virtual environment, then perhaps you can get a more realistic assessment of how well they are doing in their cognition. So that's the next iteration. And so one of the tests that we presented at this conference last week was developed by a biotech company in Washington, D.C., and it's called DANA, D-A-N-A. It's a digital automated neurocognitive assessment test based on the smartphone, and it's the first smartphone test to be cleared by the FDA for cognitive assessment. So we are currently doing studies to see how accurate and sensitive this test is for detecting Alzheimer's.
Katie, I wonder, with something like Alzheimer's and dementia, a disease which is still so unknown and terrifying, I think, for both family members and those diagnosed with it. What was it like working with these patients, and what is it like to work on a disease which is so debilitating, and there needs to be so much more done in really understanding and explaining it?
Of course, you know, working with Alzheimer's patients is really working with the family. So there's three elements. There's the subject themselves, there's the family, and then, of course, there's the clinician. So it's very important to work with the family unit as a whole. That said, I think as you're pointing out, as you're hinting, really there's vast unmet needs. We have four FDA-approved medications that are only modestly effective, so we really need much more effective therapies, both to help the person prevent the disease, and also we need sort of social support strategies for the family. So I really think the funding in the field is far less than the amount of funding it deserves, and I think we and others have called for a doubling of the federal funding for Alzheimer's research, and also an increase in funding to provide family support.
Well, I want to thank you both for being here. It's very important research. Dr. Murali Doraiswamy is a professor of psychiatry at Duke University, and Catherine Lin is a student of Dr. Doraiswamy's and a co-author of the research presented on dementia. You can find links to their study on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, an exhibit that shines a light on the last Rosenwald School in Durham County. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.